everybody listening to podcasts, I think you can sense that I'm trying some new stuff from a content and marketing standpoint. Please give me feedback on what you think about. Obviously, this is one man, one startup, one subject matter, but the concept of emerging things and emerging individuals that you may not just be able to find every day, not the same people that are being talked about every day. Love your feedback on this, because I personally am enjoying this conversation quite a bit.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Vayner Nation, how are you? Very excited about this podcast. I always like when I'm starting new pillars, new genres, new concepts. This concept of interesting emerging entrepreneurial stories is something I've been bouncing around, and I met this young gentleman in Utah, right?
Is that Salt Lake.
Yeah, yep. Salt Lake. We got some stuff brewing, and it really just kind of sat with me for a while, because I think that was in February, about like, oh, I should have him on the podcast. He'd be a great kickoff for this thing that I want to do. So first, because I know a lot of you have really cool, interesting backstories and have emerging entrepreneurial ventures, I'm excited to have many of you in the future years in this hot seat to tell your story. Obviously on this podcast, a lot of times we get to see the finished product. You know, we get a lot of cool people writing their book of their whole career, or you know, are at the top of their game. But I really want to start putting out content, because I think it's going to really matter to my audience, this audience, about individuals that I see have the potential to be the type of people that in 20 years have books about their life story or their career, but we catch them in the beginning of it, or in the middle of it, or the early middle of it. And so that's what today represents. I'm excited about this conversation, and I'd love to get feedback from all of you on Twitter or email or DM me on what you think about this genre. So kicking off our first episode in this concept of interesting emerging entrepreneurial stories, my friend, why don't you tell everybody your name, what you do, and we'll go into it. And thank you for being the kickoff first guest to this concept.
Sure. Thanks, Gary. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about my story. My name is Anthony Tassone. You can call me AT. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Trulio. We do police body camera analytics.
Yes.
And my background is Southside Chicago. Big family, brothers are veterans, became FBI agent. I didn't. I went to college. And I did quant
and
finance.
And what number were
I'm
you
number
in?
Number three, the negotiator.
Yeah, so number yeah. First two did that.
So my oldest brother and my youngest brother are veterans.
Got it.
And I went to college and did quant finance.
Yes.
Ended up on Wall Street.
Yes.
Building trading strategies and looking for signal and unstructured data. They signed on the dotted line and served the country, and now are in FBI. And so I'm super proud of them.
Yes.
From a proud military police family. And but I spent a lot of time dealing with unstructured data, looking for signal, built my first company.
Before you go there,
yep.
Why did you gravitate towards math as a kid?
Was it stats,
Wall Street?
Was games.
It, games.
Games, Got strategies, probabilities.
Was the Wall Street thing a money thing for you as a kid? Like you were like, I like games, I like math, I like stats. Oh, and now that I've become aware of this Wall Street thing, I can take those skills and it can also be a financial thing?
Sure. I liked winning games, and trading is a big game.
Yeah,
it's like
course.
A video game. And so, I like probability and stats. I thought I needed math. I learned a lot of math doing quant finance. Then you grow up and you learn that the world is not linear or
That's
deterministic.
Right.
A plus B equals C, but not in the real world. And so I learned through building trading strategies that game theory is actually more important to making money than formulas.
The gray of psychology?
Yeah, understanding herd mentality.
Yeah.
How people think, and having a trader's mindset has definitely helped me as an entrepreneur. Helped me understand how to manage risk, how to think about losing trades, whether it's like a bad hire or a decision I made that isn't working. Really allows you to separate yourself from ego.
How old are you right now?
41.
So at 41, how would you say you balance the gray and the black and white that you've just now talked about in the first couple seconds? Like if I asked you, and obviously every scenario is gonna be different, but just gut feel in your stomach right now when you are making decisions, because I think this is gonna be very powerful for a lot of people who are listening. Making decisions is like such a big part of it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think some people, a lot of people really gravitate towards one side or the other. It's all black and white linear, or it's all like gut feel.
Yeah.
What do you think your current mix is in your current state?
It became more gut as I've gotten older.
Yep.
How do I feel about this person sitting across from me?
Yep.
How do, I really think the key to making good decisions is your clarity of thought, it has to be grounded in reality, meaning you have to ask a lot of good questions to understand what actually is reality. And I learned over time that my success was highly correlated to the quality of questions I ask in a meeting.
Do you think that a lot of people are grounded in ideology?
Yes, I think a lot of people's ego is in the way. They don't, you know, they're thinking about their business. They're not being realistic that it's suffering in some way, that there's some damage, that it's not doing as well, that it could fail.
Yep.
And they've convinced themselves of a different reality.
Often not being accountable and liking the ability 100%. To blame somebody else.
Yeah.
My favorite thing is when I talk to so many, this is a big one for everybody who's listening. When you come and tell me your business is failing because of these two people that work for you, you do understand that you were the one who hired them and you were the one that is deciding to let them still be there.
Yeah, yeah. It's a, you're 100% responsible for your business, period.
100%. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things is talking to entrepreneurs over the last 15 years is their passion for who the president is, as if that's a proxy to how successful they are as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I'm aware that taxes could change under different presidencies. Mm-hmm. I'm aware that policies can. And you know, I'm aware that there's rules that can be made. But the reality is still, at the end of the day, if you're a operator, you can operate around new truths. Sometimes that's the consumer behavior. Sometimes that's a political organization. But the reality is you do have a lot of control, including things like, you know, there's a global audience, like you can leave where you live. If you're in Sweden right now and you're like, man, it's just harder to build a huge company in Sweden in tech, I'm like, move to San Francisco. You could. And so I really do love the happiness that comes along with accountability.
My gut instinct, I think, became more honed as I got older, as I had to hire people. I think during the hiring processes, it's not as black and white. It's very difficult to quantify or structure an interview.
Impossible.
You need to spend time with people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are things you should be looking for. There are certain questions you should be asking.
Or even more interesting to me has always been, and then there's, you've hired them, and then the process actually begins, right? The data gets very clear when you're actually with someone. You know, hiring, even to your point, even if you have a good process, there's still going to be so much of an intuitive guess.
Yeah, you're not gonna bat 1,000.
Not even close. Yeah. Working with someone, the data becomes dramatically more clear. So what you do about it once you realize you've made a poor hire or a great hire really becomes the variable of growth.
You need to eliminate poor hires, especially a small startup like Trulio. I owe it to my team, my investors, my customers, and that person. If they're not the right person to be at the company, it's not right for them or their family or their growth. And so it's better just have that honest conversation.
Let's back all the way back up where I distracted us and took us off course. So, okay, so you're trading, then what happens?
Yeah, so I'm building trading strategies, you know, systematic approach to trading, all model building. Everything is, you know, nothing's discretionary. I built systems. And so I work on Wall Street, and I learned to do something called natural language processing, which is essentially transcribing and analyzing calls. Yep. I was very interested in structuring all the different conversations I had. At one point, I had 180 counterparties that I would talk to. And I wanted to make our conversation searchable so that if somebody called me and asked for Coca-Cola, I could search who else asked me for this product in the past. And so I was very interested in structuring unstructured data, email, chat messages. A lot of trading is still done over instant message, believe it or not. And so I learned about natural language processing, and I ended up forming a company simply because I was pissed off that trading, you're worth 1x multiple revenue. There's no multiple on your revenue. Trading forces you to be a very perpetual learner because strategies decay so fast. After 9 months, a strategy is irrelevant.
And that's because everyone catches up to the strategy?
Yeah, because trading today is like Star Wars. I mean, people use AI. Yeah, inefficiencies are spotted quickly. And
extracted quickly.
Yes. So you need to be, you need to evolve and adapt very quickly. And it's a lot of work, and you're still going to be worth 1x multiple. There's no SaaS. No one's going to acquire you for your trading multiple or your trading revenues, what occurred last year. And so right around 30, I started my first company, Green Key, and we transcribed and analyzed banker phone calls, and we gave the bank client insights. You know, what are their customers calling for? What are they upset about? how do you hire better salespeople? What
change
should they
say? Change your product, fix the product, whatever it is.
Yep. Yeah, how do you create better objection handling? We were structuring the unstructured data.
Yep. And give us a little bit more of how that went.
Sure. So I've made a lot of mistakes in my life.
Of course.
One big mistake. The
good
number.
News. So is every single person listening.
The number one problem that a founder entrepreneur needs to solve is, what is the problem you want to solve? That's it. Like that, everything starts with the problem you're choosing to solve. Because everyone, you're going to have to work hard, but the how you direct that hard work is very important. The problem we tried to solve, looking back on it, we were solving a problem for banks that we thought would move this data to the cloud. They didn't. We made a lot of assumptions that were bad. Another big assumption we made was that...
Did you make assumptions out of what you knew would be better, but didn't understand that the customer wasn't ready?
Yes. But also, you know...
I apologize. I jumped in, noticed everyone, even just rewind this and start where, you know, 2 minutes ago and just keep listening. The reason I was able to jump into that is talk about pattern recognition. No different than people living on ideology versus reality. Mm-hmm. When I tell you the single thing that I see over and over of very capable talent in startup land is knowing what is better, but getting there too fast for the market, because the market has other rationales where the best technology or the best thing isn't the actual North Star. There's some sort of other rationale, legacy software, contracts, political relationships, in the business sense of political relationships. So keep an eye out for that. You might be right, but you might be so early, or you might have been naive to how people make decisions.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Timing is everything. The customer might not be ready for you to solve their problem in the way you want to solve it.
Correct.
And so another issue with that business was that we would do a great job for JP Morgan. And guess what? They would paper us and say, don't tell anybody about how this works. And so there was no viral coefficient. We couldn't build on that success. They didn't want Goldman Sachs to know what we just did.
Right.
And so that's very different than, for example, in policing, where I do a great job for one department and they tell 50. But if you do a bad job, they tell 100.
Right.
And so, but I like that business. I like a business where I can compete on quality of service
and
quality of product.
Of it.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
Let's actually segue to that. So that business had a story, quickly. How did that wrap up?
Eight years, it was acquired in 2021.
Okay, and you were happy with that?
Yes.
Good, and so then you sell a business that you were happy about, so that's good. So that means, you said 2021?
Yes.
So very recently.
A year and a half ago,
right. So you're 39, 40, whenever this deal goes down. Mm-hmm. What's running through your mind post that exit, and how does that play into what you're doing now?
The problem of police trust being low, I thought about it, was obsessed about it. I like thinking about problems that society has that it doesn't yet know how to get the solution to.
Right.
And so trust in the police is low for a lot of different reasons.
Yep.
And I thought, actually, I'm in a very unique position to maybe solve that problem. So I began to research it.
Interesting.
I went around to the camera providers, right, the people that manufacture body cameras, and I said, hey guys, NLP is 8 years old at this point. Transcription's 30 years old. Why aren't you guys analyzing body camera video? I wanted to figure out why no one else was doing
this. You're asking the questions.
Yeah, doing a lot of research, went around and met with various chiefs, went to the FBI National Academy, which is the top gun of policing, met with the top 1% of police. Hey guys, this is what I think the problem is. I think this is how I can solve it. What do you guys think? Just doing
a lot of Q&A.
You
already have a lot of nuances and hypotheses because you got your brothers around you, and so it's between research and then kind of like listening to the stories and I'm sure whatever that was, you're on a hunch and then you're confirming hunches with more questions and you're going through this process. How long does that go?
That goes for about 6 months.
And what happens at the end of that 6 months? What's the eureka or the
I see signal. I
see
get it. Access to data.
Yep.
I look at unstructured data. I quantify cops language and I see in the data cops that give more explanation have better outcomes.
Before we go down this, which I think is super fascinating, I want you to go back to the natural language stuff as a whole, because it's at the foundation of where you're about to go. And we have so many different people listening. There's gonna be like the people that are generally just interested, like I am, which is probably why you're here, of like, hey, this is really cool to like solve some of life's biggest dilemmas through technologies that are emerging with AI and everything else coming. There's like a whole new world order of the next 100. I can't wait to watch from heaven. Like the next 100 years, we're gonna do a lot of cool shit. But then there's also like the nerdiness of this. There's a lot of people that could find their calling because of this. Break down the natural language stuff for just a quick second. We'll go back to where we are on the police stuff. But I think, you know, watching videos, transcribing the words, and then structuring that to like actually get into an ahas or six is really cool.
Yeah, I understand. So, so most of the electronic communication between computers is done over protocols, or had been, right? So you write to an API, there's a protocol, there's a format. For these two strings to be passed back and forth, they have to be in a certain order. And that's how the world worked primarily. But that's not how humans communicate. We communicate in an unstructured way through language and video and chat and instant message and all this. And so
body language?
Yeah. So NLP, natural language processing, it's a subfield of AI. It's like the intersection of linguistics, where basically it structures language so that a machine can understand. Not just the word being spoken, but the sentiment and the meaning behind it. So NLP is being used to, for example, summarize a document. It can be used to label documents where, okay, these words are empathy, this is questioning, this is, you know, different types of labels that created. Like in Trulio, we create labels around an arrest, use of force, noncompliance. And so
you categorize
the insights, which is how humans are actually conveying. We're conveying these large insights back and forth. So NLP is just a way to structure unstructured data so machines can process it.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
It's like an interface between humans and machines.
With ML and NLP, like all of this stuff is like, for a long time, I'm like, man, this is a, because for me, all my magic was in the gray and in the intuition. And so like when this all started hitting my radar 4, 7, 8 years ago, I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm gonna retire because my magic can actually become commoditized over time, which is profound.
Yes.
It's profound. Like everything that has worked for me
is
actually gonna be mapped.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's structured in like an Excel spreadsheet. NLP makes data come alive and be able to be structured so it can be analyzed and compared.
So you go through this journey, you start analyzing the videos, and you're like, shit, I got stuff.
Trader's mindset, sifting through a bunch of unstructured data, thinking about, should I start this company? Well, I need to know that there's signal. I need to know for sure because there's a lot of noise. I'll give you some examples. You could
break down signal and noise because I'm aware of it, but I feel like a lot of people can get a lot of value if you're breaking it down.
Sure. So, you know, signal or alpha is like looking at data sets and finding causation. And it's like an example would be in the data sets we mine, you could say, well, you know, I don't want cops to say swear words. Well, I got news for you. They're super effective cops that say swear words.
Of course.
We can look at their data and I'll find civilian gratitude. They've got good outcomes. Even though that they use some profanity. And so that we realize, well, actually, it's directed profanity. It's the F you to somebody that they don't like.
Of course.
And humans, civilians don't like insults and threats.
Watch this, everyone. Dustin, let's go fucking kill it together.
Yeah.
Versus Dustin, fuck you, motherfucker.
Exactly.
Yep.
Thank you. Yeah, so we had to sift through noise and look for what is the actual signal? What is it that creates good outcomes for cops and civilians? Here's another example. The number one complaint from a civilian for a cop is he was rude. He or she was rude to me. What that means in the data is that the officer gives commands and doesn't negotiate. There's no listening. There's no back and forth. We don't monitor tone. I want to tell you why. You can do it. Tone, cadence, volume, clipping, frequency, all this stuff. There's not enough signal there.
Got it.
Because there's loud cops that are respectful and effective. And so I don't think the science is there
intent?
Yet. Well,
I'm sorry, podcast, I'm apologizing right now. I'm getting very selfish. It's insane to me how much the currency of my brain, like my being, believes that intent is like this, like it's unbelievable. I basically make every decision based on my interpretation of the intent. Is that something that can factor in? Or is that just too fucking hard at this point?
We can't do it. I don't know if anybody can do it. We can't. And my job as CEO is to make sure we only work on the things that we're going to do really well.
I like
that.
And
we can't do that well. We can't do image analysis well. So we don't work on those things.
Yeah, it's funny. As VaynerMedia, as the agency we're sitting in right now, I think one of the somebody asked me the other night, he's like, man, you guys literally built one of the biggest agencies of all time in such a short period of time. Like, how? And I'm like, there's a lot of answers. But it was funny, it was similar to what you just said. I was like, you know, self-awareness. I was really, really clear in my brain of what we could do exceptionally well compared to everyone else and what would be a commodity or as good as everyone else or below everyone else. So I really love hearing that. It's a real big insight for all the founders listening. Understanding that, not doing things you think you have to do because everyone else is doing it. Focusing on strengths versus trying to like half-ass weaknesses.
You need to protect your company with the word no. Customers are gonna ask you to do a lot of crazy stuff and bolt on different solutions. Yes. You need to say no to that stuff and stay true to your
especially
core
in B2B
value.
Land.
Yeah.
Because then your product becomes Frankenstein.
Then your professional services.
And yeah, I think that's
those
right.
aren't good multiples.
So you're going through and you're seeing it. I mean, this is that must feel like
elation.
What's that, brother?
Yeah, elated.
Not only elated, pretty emotional because, you know, look, I'm trying to do great advertising communications and that's important. And obviously when I do it for nonprofits versus for profit, like there's a different feeling, but like you're not fucking around here. Like this is a big one. Like God forbid, which I mean God willing, I use it as slang. You map this one, you get this at scale, like you're gonna do a lot of good for the world. Talk about getting this right. Mm-hmm. That just helps a lot.
Yeah, we're super excited about our mission. You know, the vast majority of police do a pretty good job. There's some percentage that shouldn't be cops.
Yep.
But this gives them a map, a protocol, a structure of an algorithm to follow. It's very simple to follow. We give them the rules of this video game. They play the game. They structure their strategic language around it, and they're going to have better outcomes.
How many cops in America or around the world today wear a body cam?
Well, in the U.S., there's about 1 million cops, and about 650,000, 700,000 of them wear cameras.
Really high number.
Yeah, it's not 100% yet. They still don't have cameras in rural counties and things. Every major city has cameras.
And how many like cameras go defunct? You always hear, again, the news is such hyperbole, which is what, like, I love what you said in here, like, which is like what I think about all the time, which is there's probably not a, there's very few humans on earth that are more optimistic about humans than I am. It is what keeps me so happy.
Yeah.
I believe in Team Human so much. It's crazy. I'm also aware that the small percentage of humans that don't hold up to a level of humanity that we all aspire to are eating up the oxygen of the conversation, thus rendering a lot of people feeling unhappy. Because I think the noise around the 1 or 2% that aren't doing it well clouds us to understanding that 98% of people are good people doing the thing. And so, and that comes in every form, parenting, politics, teachers, police, on and on, relationships. So your point earlier of like, most cops are doing it really right, some people shouldn't be, and then there's probably some sort of thing in the middle with a little tweaking and training could get to the side that you wanted to. And so, I mean, I assume this is a massive tool for whom, the chief?
Yes, a chief would use it to sort of mitigate risk, right? They want to go to sleep at night, but the tool's designed for the sergeant. The sergeant's responsible for 8 or 9 people called their squad. And it gives the sergeant the ability to do some coaching, to identify moments of noncompliance or any unprofessional language, to intervene and say, hey, cut that out. And during noncompliance, hey, I noticed you interrupt this person. I noticed that you gave a lot of commands. They asked questions. You didn't give explanation. So it's really a tool designed to help the sergeant.
How much is bad behavior that isn't on like what is ideal predicated on fear?
Most of it.
Yeah.
So these young cops that give a lot of commands, that's what's going on.
Yeah,
they're afraid.
Man.
They're in this situation. They're nervous.
Yep.
If they weren't nervous, they'd be more confident. They'd engage in more negotiation.
Makes
and
sense.
So what happens is the older the cops get, the more fights they've been in, the better their language becomes. That's what we saw in the
pattern
data.
Pattern recognition.
Yeah. So I want to basically help young cops speak like old cops as quickly as possible.
Interesting. You know, just to get out of your startup and this incredibly interesting thing back to like a rising start, where do you think, give me another genre of the world where you think, you know, structuring the data could have a profound impact? Because if your brain is playing puzzles and games, like, you know, obviously you're super focused on your startup right now, which is cool. And I think it's such an important topic, which is why I'm happy to have you on. Just take me out of that for a quick second. Just knowing you're a human being living life, and I think we all do this, whatever our framework is, we can see it in other places.
Yeah.
Give me a for instance, you know, this is almost like maybe inspiring someone who's also strong at this.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, did you look at what's going on with the surf current or like with soccer? Or like, where else do you see a huge opportunity right now in this? Anything stand out?
Yeah, because I come from sort of a market-centric background, what I mean is I think about how liquidity interacts with each other, right? Building trading strategies, I think very deeply about liquidity dynamics and matching engines. Blockchain is basically markets for networks. That's how I think about it. It's like networks interacting with each other in a market sense. So an example would be, Gary, if my car is behind yours, my car is going to be able to negotiate with your car to get out of the way so I can pass you, and maybe I pay you some fee. And so cars are going to be
okay. Let's stop right there.
Yeah,
like that. I like the way Dustin responded, and my brain did the same thing, and I was shockingly quiet. That was fucking amazing. To your point, this is all goes to the techno. I keep telling my friends, I'm like, because I am profoundly stunned that people think technology stops in their lifehood. I'm like, you do understand that like people were our age, 40, and then like the car was just invented at that time, and then like everything changed, or the TV, or a plane. I'm like, AI is gonna happen, and more crazy stuff's gonna happen. So to your point, self-driving cars at scale, right, in the world, now on networks, 5G, 6G, 7G, 13G, it's gonna get fast enough, no lag time. And now, because I'm in a rush,
I'm paying more.
I can actually be in my car in 27 years, 9 years, 99 years, whenever this happens, and I could say, I'm about to pay a VIG. This is exactly right. This is exactly what blockchain is gonna do. Makes so much damn sense. I'm literally gonna be in an interface and be like, I need to actually get there in 17, because I could get there in 17 minutes in travel time, but it's the traffic that's gonna make 39. So now I'm gonna pay the drivers in front of me a VIG to actually get me there in 17 minutes, because that is actually that valuable to me, because if I lose that 15 minutes, I might not get the business deal, and this might be worth $1,000 for me. And that could be disseminated amongst the 83 cars in front of me to, or 830 for me to get there, yes?
Yes, that was an example of how
Fucking rad.
Yeah. Well, I was just explaining how markets, how I think of blockchain is like this big market for networks. But the NLP component of blockchain, you asked what I think about. I think right now it's hard to know what's true, you know, in the world.
Yes.
And if you have this big network of, authenticators and consensus, I think there's a product where we dump things onto a blockchain, and that network, through consensus, decides whether that's true or not. And so that'll be done through NLP, because that's going to be a bunch of unstructured data.
Correct.
Here's this article I read. It got dumped on the blockchain. The chain says this thing is true.
And there's because these are decentralized servers, yes, and nobody can really impact them, it has the capacity for provenance and truth that the internet and society does not.
Yeah, exactly. Through page linking, the network can decide whether that's true. Those are factual statements.
That's right.
And something will then be relatively true, and we'll be able to have confidence that what we're reading is relatively factual.
Right, because to your point, like for many years, take it back 300 years or what have you, 100, I don't care where you go, like what was in a book was default into believing. Like we believed it. This is clearly, the blockchains are clearly have the potential to replicate that energy in the world in 100 years, clearly. I agree with that. I'm still pumped about paying $1,000 to get to my next meeting.
Sure.
A little bit. No, but it's really powerful.
Yeah.
Like I really do love that. Okay, before we run out of time, what have we not, I always like to leave 5 or 7, 10 minutes for this. You were coming in this morning, we're gonna have this podcast, I'm sure it was fun. I was excited about it because I knew this would be a fun one. I'm really excited about the audience's take on this. I think we're gonna be able to bring a lot of value from these kind of stories and meeting individuals around the world like yourself doing interesting things. What did we not touch on that you kind of thought we would talk about here today? Kind of giving you the open floor. Yeah. What did we, and you can be very selfish here, anything you want to talk about or anything that we didn't talk about?
Yeah, I've raised a lot of capital throughout my life, whether it's seed or series A or B or even through exits. Trulio, in addition to professional VC, we've done crowdfunding and we put it up on our website. It's an invest now button. And I think founders should be thinking about crowdfunding in the future. And I really think it's interesting because it's sort of a big digital marketing exercise.
Yes.
And for a business like Trulio, it's a big digital marketing exercise. It's a call to action where these engaged civilians want to be involved somehow, and this is a way that they can. And what I'm seeing is that, if somebody invests $100, that's fine. They could be somebody that drives a $100,000 deal in their city because they go to their city council, they go to their mayor, and they say, I want this product in our city. I'm a taxpayer. We bought cameras. We're paying for storage. And so the idea of crowdfunding, I think, is very, very interesting and important because it can create activated ambassadors for your brand.
Got it. So you're saying how humans work. If I'm a human and I put $500 into an investment through a crowdfunding, no different than like people that buy a stock yeah. on the public market, and then now that they bought Nike, they buy Nikes in the store yeah. or they like Nike. You're saying that the crowdfunding allows them to be micro business development and awareness engines, and that in general, from a psychology standpoint and a strategy standpoint, might be highly interesting because it's not just about the $409 that they put in, which might be quite small in a $50 million raise. Mm-hmm. It's that they may actually trigger behavior that leads to higher economic impact on the business.
That's exactly right.
Uh-huh. Makes a ton of sense, especially at scale.
Yeah.
If 13,000 people do that, mm-hmm. it could get real interesting real fast.
Mm-hmm. It might not be right for every business. For a business like Trulio, which right now is B2B, right? The first 100 departments are early adopters.
Yeah, where are you guys? Where? How far along are
20 departments out of 18,000 in the U.S.
So there's 18,000 police departments
yep.
in the U.S., and you're in 20 right now.
Yep.
So we're very, 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 very early.
Mm-hmm.
How long has the longest one been using it?
16 months, like since day one.
And like without tooting your own horn, like give us a, I assume like there's gotta be something that's really cool.
Yeah, so we
learn this. Yeah.
We learn to embed academics in these departments to measure outcomes. So in this department, Alameda, California, in the Bay Area,
yep.
they had a 36% drop in use of force. 36%.
Got it, in the 16 months,
yep.
they've had 36% less need for force.
Yep.
Because of all the training and from the insights that we were able to create.
Yes, because
cool.
yeah, officers have better outcomes. There's less non-compliance. They're less transactional, right? The cops are smart. Once they know their camera data is being analyzed, they're a little bit more patient. They speak differently.
The machine learning and all this, like I assume the more the, so at scale, the more you continue to analyze, the more you're gonna get further down the pipe of like another subtle insight, another subtle insight. So this thing yeah. gets stronger over time, yes?
I'm building a virtual sergeant. I mean, that's what we, I don't think cops are gonna, departments are gonna hire more cops. I think they're gonna, we're gonna build virtual bots that automate supervision, coaching, and they promote professionalism. They're gonna create content for departments.
Do you think what about robots that are like RoboCop? I didn't even have to think for, like, yeah. I already, like, where do you think that, like, do you think that's gonna be wild, right?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure if there'll be, you know, robots.
I would definitely listen to RoboCop more than a regular
okay.
cop. Like if a cop was like, yo, don't like I like to like probably jaywalk too much here in the city. Mm-hmm. Like if a cop was like, yo, I'm like, yo, I'm so sorry. But like if a robot did it, I'd probably run back. Like yeah. like the robot would probably scare the shit out of me. Like mm-hmm. laser me or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you think we're more likely to listen to robots than humans?
I think we're more likely to listen to female cops, actually. We need more females.
I like that.
They give explanation about 12 times the rate as a male.
Makes sense. They're always
better
than us.
They have to be more strategic in their communication.
We're such boys,
we do.
Right?
I got three girls. Okay, I agree.
Okay, man. We're such fuck-ups. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. That yeah. Right, to your point, this is where the data gets super duper 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 interesting mm-hmm. and becomes more actionable. I love it. Again, I know we're running out of time. Just because I'm so fascinated by this. Again, everybody listening to the podcast, I think you can sense that I'm trying some new stuff from a content and marketing standpoint. Please give me feedback on what you think about. Obviously, this is one man, one startup, one subject matter, but the concept of emerging things and emerging individuals that you may not just be able to find every day, not the same people that are being talked about every day. Love your feedback on this, because I personally am enjoying this conversation quite a bit. Last parting shots.
Appreciate you, Gary. Yeah,
course,
appreciate you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Of course.
Thanks so much.
But that's very sweet. But one last parting shot, like a RoboCop or something. Anything else cool or interesting from being a founder or raising capital or anything in the machine learning space?
As a founder, have an athlete mindset. You know, get sleep. Don't do drugs. Limit your alcohol. Think about your physical being like an athlete. You know, it's really, really hard. And your team needs you to be making the best decisions possible.
Love it. Thank you for being on the show.
Appreciate you. Thanks, Gary. Thank you, sir.
That was fun.
Yeah.